The title of the message is That Apple. Genesis 3, I'll read a little bit. The woman said to the serpent, "We may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God did say, 'You must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden. You must not touch it, or you will die.' 'You will not certainly die,' the serpent said to the woman, 'for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil.' When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it, and also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized they were naked. So they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves." That's as far as I'm going to go today. At Sunday school, they were teaching how God created everything, including human beings. Little Johnny seemed especially intent when they told him how Eve was created out of one of Adam's ribs. Later in the week, his mother noticed him laying down as though he were ill. She said, "Johnny, what's the matter?" Little Johnny responded, "I have a pain in my side. I think I'm going to have a wife." The people that think these things up, you know. We're continuing on in Genesis, as you can well see. And we're going to talk about the apple eventually. And this particular section of text is what really defines the Genesis story and the fall of humanity. You have to decide at some point in time, as you grow up in a Christian life and read the Bible, whether you the meaning of the word woman, whether you think it's a female, or does it mean wisdom, or some other meaning. You have to decide and think if you're going to accept the traditional way of thinking. Woman ate the apple, throwing humanity forever into a world of sin and duality. Yes?
It probably means, whoa, man.
That's a good thought.
W-O-E.
Yeah. Woe unto man. That's man and woman. That's humanity. Look around you today. The fruit of that idea, or this idea of the woman has fallen and taken humanity with them, is everywhere you look. From the civil rights to unequal pay, women have to cover their head. All sorts of religions and faiths still have the idea that woman was the lesser of the two, and they are demeaned and put down and not equal. Even in this great country, we still do today. We don't have, women's rights is a fairly new thing. It hasn't been around for very long. In the words of our present president, "Make America Great Again," I had no problem with "Make America Great," but the word "again" kind of stuck in my head. I didn't really know, and I don't want to wade into politics or anything like that, but the simple word "again" kind of threw me off as to going back to a time when it was equality and it was great and everything was great. I don't know any time in this country when there was equality for everybody. And when it was really, yes, this country has been great. Don't get me wrong. I understand that. But we still live in the effects of this story. We're still living these effects of how you take this story right here, whether you blame women or not, and whether you demean the sexes or not. The point is that we are still living and eating the fruit from this idea. We haven't gotten away from it very far. We're still, and I really don't know why we can't seem to understand this particular text and why we fell into this idea. Even St. Paul promoted this idea. Even though he wrote in Galatians 3 somewhere, I have it marked, where he talks about equality for all people. You know, there's no difference in anybody in Christ, Gentile or Jew, Jew or Gentile, slave or free, male or female. So he promoted that idea that there's equality in Christ, but yet when he was instructing Timothy on how to carry on within the church, he put women down. And I was going to read a verse here, if I can find it. Women should learn to be quiet and full submission. Women are not permitted to teach or assume authority over the man. She should be quiet. Adam was formed first, then Eve. Adam was not the one that was deceived. It was a woman who was deceived and became a sinner. But women, here is where he, where I wanted to make the comment. He says that women will be saved through childbearing if they continue in faith and love and holiness and propriety. He promotes the idea that women will be elevated to an equal status through childbirth. Well, how do you equate that? That's Paul, to me, is going back to his Jewish roots and bringing that forward. You would have thought that Paul, starting the new emerging church that was starting up, that he would have promoted equality of the sexes right from the very start, because if there's equality in Christ, then he should have seen the equality of the sexes in the church. But I think he, not knowing how to develop the church, I'll cut him a break anyway, he went back to his old Jewish ideas and brought them forward in the church. And said, because in the old traditional Jewish ideas that women aren't allowed to speak, they have to have their hair covered, they have to all this kind of stuff. And one of the ideas is through childbirth that they are elevated up into an equal status with man.
Woe
to the barren woman. That's why a barren woman in the Old Testament was considered to be a curse. Or it was not, you know, that they were, had no chance of redemption or being redeemed. In a sense.
No, it could be the
male's
fault, too.
Oh, no. No male's fault here, nowhere.
Well, Colleen, she can't do it all by herself.
Well, I think for the Greeks thought that the women had nothing to do with it. It was all done by the male. And they just carried it. The woman just carried the child. That was it. So there's a long string of ideas that go back to, but again, I don't see, did you want to make a comment?
No.
Okay, you were smiling, I thought. Okay, well, you can, that's okay. I still don't know why he promoted this idea. You know, even though the only thing that Paul saw as being equal was in his Jewish-Gentile equality, I think sometimes it was the Jewish males and the Gentile males. They were basically the only ones that were considered equality and had in the church.
But he does say also neither bond or free, neither male nor female.
Well, then why didn't he enact that idea in the church, in the early church?
One in Christ Jesus. I don't know, but he does add that there's neither male nor female.
Well, I understand that. That's my idea of what I'm trying to say. Why didn't he move that into the church and make that something of the early church tenets?
Possibly because he became whatever a person needed to hear in order to save Christ. You said that
yeah.
A few weeks ago, where he said he became a Jew to the Jews, a Greek to the Greeks, what have you, in order to bring them into salvation. So perhaps this to a group that already thought that, and he's just trying to win them. So I don't know.
That's a good point. So he was using the social norms of the day and establishing a church in an organized church. So if he would have went and had equality for everybody, then maybe there would have been a little more resistance, maybe to some degree. But I think Paul, when he was saying that, what you were saying, I become a Greek with the Greeks, he was arguing from a Greek point or a Roman point or a Jewish point in order to move them to another place. But even still, he may have been using that particular idea here as a social norm. That's why I'm not quite sure if Paul really thought that or he did this, like we just said, in order for the social norms of the day. But somehow we today read Timothy and say that's the authority. And we still do. There's a lot of churches who have male hierarchy and that's it. That's all there is. And I think that's wrong. I disagree with that totally. I think there's a great misunderstanding of this particular story, which I have been putting forth here in the last several messages. And I don't believe that woman here is female. It's wisdom. Our wisdom, God's wisdom, however you want to see the picture. Because our helpmate, the human helpmate, was wisdom. Without wisdom, that means we have experience, and we accumulate knowledge, and then we have wisdom. And here is the story, the way I see it is, because we lacked human experience, because we lacked knowledge, we were tricked into thinking something. That's what the story is trying to illustrate. That we, some people would say, it's only through free will that we chose to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So this is where, again, where free will starts. I'm not a free will person, as you tell. We have the freedom to choose or not to choose. But the will is not free. That's a technical argument that I'll argue until the sun goes down. And then some.
So then when the sun goes down, you're done?
No. And then some, I said, because I knew you would say that. We have done that before, Colleen and I. Years past, when we were a lot younger. It's an explanation. These stories, the first three chapters, four chapters, are an explanation of explain why things are the way they are. Why the situation in the human psyche and the human condition is the way it is, and the development of and explaining the human soul or the breath, and which eventually will be wrapped around by skins. So it's an internal dialogue in which we are. We all have, to some extent. It's not a male-female thing. Like I said, get rid of the gender idea. Just because I say women have wisdom don't mean make women smarter.
Sure does.
No. We're equal but different.
Okay. I can go along with that.
And we both have wisdom. We both have experience. We both have knowledge. We both have, and that's how I see the text. It's not about woman doing something they shouldn't have, and none of that. Because I don't know if you remember a couple of messages ago when I talked to you about in chapter 2 about the when the man or the human named all the wild animals, I converted that over to emotions. And out of emotions come knowledge and wisdom. So it's a continuation. So it's like the garden, I was thinking this week, it's like a big sphere of energy. We know science says it's like a plasma energy. And I know that there's people who are not here today who have seen at the time of death a sphere of energy leaving the body. That has been accounted for in various different times. I saw one myself. So I see that as a way of explaining the garden. That's the in which this story places all these things in and then wraps it around with human flesh in the end on the way out of the garden. Let that sink in for a little bit. See what you think. Dan? Okay, not yet. So let's look at the text. First of all, I'll explain the apple. There's no apple. The word came about in about the 4th century when they were making the Latin Vulgate Bible, when they were translating it from Hebrew to Latin. And the word The Latin word for apple and evil is the same. One is an adjective and one is a noun. When used as a noun, malus, M-A-L-U-S, malus, M-A-L-U-S, that's the Latin word that can be used either way. One as an adjective, one as a noun. As an adjective, it's evil, and as a noun, it is an apple or a hanging fruit. There's a debate as exactly what it means in Latin. It could be any type of hanging fruit. Some people thought early on it could mean any type of hanging fruit. So that's where the idea of apple came into the Bible text of Eve ate an apple. And that was in the 4th century. That was it took about a 15-year project to make the Vulgate. And Jerome was, I think, is the one, I think that's what it says there, was in charge of it. It's an interesting way. Here again, it's merely because of translation that we get the word apple, that Eve ate the word apple. I mean, ate the fruit apple. But some people argue that it could have been a fig or a pomegranate or a grape or an apricot. It could have been anything. Some people even thought it was an intoxicating wine that she drank. So I can probably if I really recall back in my early days of growing up, when they gave messages about not drinking, they may have brought that idea up then, maybe. I don't know. I can't say for sure that they would have used that, but that would have been a place where they would have probably put it, for sure. Would have been a very easy way to put it. So the idea is that within ourselves, we have this inner dialogue in which we have. Now, every one of us, as I said before, all have this inner dialogue. If you're alive, you're having something inside of you going on, various different things. You're asking questions. You're looking at different things. You're questioning things. You have a core in which you reach out. And wisdom is woman who represents that in the human nature. Throughout the Bible, it is always she. Throughout the Bible. She is throughout the Bible. Now, I made a list of things that I'm not going to get into today. How certain things like the serpent, the eyes, the wisdom travels through the Bible. And it comes out at Jesus' end. I'll eventually get to that, but not today. So last week I said about the serpent. We'll start off there. I'll say that again. Some of you weren't here. The serpent is not the devil. Because of the story in Moses, because when the Israelite people had done something wrong and they sinned, Moses erected a serpent on a stander, and they all had to look at the serpent to be healed. Jesus and John records it as, just as the serpent in the wilderness was raised up, so Christ must also be raised up. There's a comparison between that story and the story in Moses. We also use the serpent on a staff for our medical. What's the word? Double helix. Okay, I don't know that word. I call it double helix. Yeah, well, it's shaped like that. Yeah. You can go. What Galen is saying is that the double helix going up the staff could represent the DNA chain, which could be. I'm not denying that at all. But we use that, and our doctors use that. That symbol has been used to heal from a double and a single, a snake, a serpent around a staff. It's used in the medical field for healing. So if we're going to say that the serpent here is the devil, then you're going to have to say the devil heals, as I said last Sunday. And that's not true. So the serpent here means something else. And the reason they get the serpent meaning the devil is they go the whole way to Revelations, and there are some references in the New Testament, but I think that's, again, I think it is a bad translation. When they go to Revelations and they talk about the dragon, the great dragon, they assume that they're talking about the serpent in Genesis. And that's a failure, as far as I'm concerned, of theology. You're trying to force the Bible to say something it's not saying. And that has been done many times and still is being done. So to start off with, the serpent is not the devil. The fruit represents the product of an idea. There's a tree, it has a hanging fruit, you eat the essence of the idea, you ingest the idea, and you accept the idea as being true. My question is, if we weren't supposed to mess with the tree of knowledge of good and evil, why was it put in the center of the garden? Right smack in the center. Now why? What is that trying to tell us? That God knew that we were going to be tempted and fall? I mean, if we weren't supposed to eat from it, why would it have been put off to the side somewhere?
Free will. You have the ability to make the choice.
To make the choice, but we don't have a free will.
Put temptation right in front of us.
Every day, temptation is in front of us, isn't it? Isn't that what the story's trying to illustrate? Every one of us have temptation. Every one of us. So it's an inside journey, inside ourselves. It is explaining the breath within us. It's trying to look and tell us, look, you're made up of all these parts. It's not about one person, in this case the woman, eating something and condemning the world. If that's the case, then males weren't very responsible with her helpmate. They should have been charged with irresponsibility. But they weren't. So the idea that the story is trying to tell us more and something different is everywhere you can see. So the story goes on to say how the woman ate the tree, ate from the fruit, and it was pleasing to the eye. The use of the word eyes and eye are two different things. The eye is the spiritual eye, and the eyes are the physical eyes. And this text has a tendency to move back and forth. You got to figure out which is where, which is where, which is where. Because it moves from the spiritual to a more physical and back again. But most of the time it's inside. So she saw it with her physical eyes and thought it was good for her spiritualness.
Does it say that in the Bible? Do you have a physical eye? And a...
That's just known. Let your eye be one, I think is, Jesus uses that phrase.
That's like your third eye, trying to see with, you know,
yeah.
With wisdom and knowledge, for lack of a better word to say, you know.
In a non-dualistic way. Yeah. It represents a non-dualistic way, which we were talking about in Sunday school, and in Eastern religion, it's located between your, right above your nose, between your eyes, in the center of your forehead. It's an insight type of eye.
I haven't seen pictures of that.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. If some people want to associate with the all-seeing eye that's on the dollar bill and the Illuminati and all that. That's a little too far out for me. I'm not going to go that far and say that that's what that means. But it's the illuminating eye or the understanding eye that you understand inside.
Sense, something
yeah.
That, you know,
yes.
Intellectually, spiritually, you know,
yes.
Where you gain.
Yeah. It's more the spiritual perception that you have.
That little voice that's talking to you. Whatever.
That's part of that little voice that talks to you. That chatter that I'm talking about. The inner soul that I think this text is talking about. So it moves in and out from that. So I would say that the serpent didn't lie at all. Now, some people would quiver in their boots if they heard that. What he said was true. It was a deception from the spiritualness to the physicalness is where the deception came. Or, as Connie says, the choice or the free will, which I'm not a free will person, where choice comes in. So what he said was, the serpent questioned what God has said. He said to Eve that God said not to eat from any tree. Not the one tree in the middle.
He asked it as a question. Did God say
yes.
You shan't eat from
that's a, what, a rhetorical question?
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of. So it was like, okay, let me see if you're really on the ball. Let me see if I can trick you. Do you really know this? And he comes back and says, oh, He didn't say, she didn't, the wisdom didn't say no. It says we are allowed to eat from any tree in the garden except the one right smack in the middle, and we're not supposed to touch it or we will die. Well, what happens next? The serpent says, you will not surely die. And for God knows that when you eat this, your eyes, your physical eyes will be opened, which is true. And you will be like God. Doesn't say be God. Be like God, knowing good and evil. Now, don't all of us know what good and evil are?
How did they even know what the middle was?
Way down in the middle of your heart. I think that's what it means. In the center of your heart, this is where this tree is. Whatever that is. In the center of your spiritual eye. In the center of your garden. I don't know. Where is the center of your consciousness? Or your being?
Your brain?
Well, what about your heart? I think more things happen here than here. Up here is where logic happens. Down here is more where I feel. That's open for debate, believe me. That, through time, has moved back and forth, back and forth. The Greeks were different, huh? Right. Logic comes from the brain, and you say, oh, it was no emotions. Emotions reside in the heart. Now, we can, whatever. It goes through time, because it goes back and forth.
Well, that's more symbolic than, physical, literally.
No, I think they literally say, in a spiritual sense, that to be true.
Spiritual sense, but...
The spirit, the breath within us. So you have now you have to, you're going to say into the chakras and a more spiritual understanding, a lot more depth than I'm going to get in here today for sure. But that is considered to be that your emotions. You have places in your body in which energy flows.
Yeah, energy centers
that we have. This is science. This is not stuff. This is actually science.
I guess if you get scared, you feel it in the middle of your stomach.
Yes.
And your brain.
Right. You feel that emotion down here, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. I don't like the dark, so when I go out in the dark, I feel it right here. I don't feel it up here. Logic says me I shouldn't be afraid of nothing, but right here it tells me I'm scared. I'm supposed to learn how to do these things. I agree. I agree that I think the Bible and Christianity should be talking a lot more about these things, how to transform yourself. So what is transformation? Transformation is changing something within us, not to see from the outside all the time, but see from the heart. That's what transformation is about, isn't it? Isn't that what the experience of the Christian faith is about? And you're right. I should. But for the life of me, I not to this day, I can't get over the dark. I'm sorry. I hear things.
Carry a flashlight.
Okay. Well, what's past the flashlight? Only shines so far. Then it might be coming behind me. You know, I mean, my mind plays all kinds of games on me when I go out in the dark. I just don't like the dark. I can survive, but I don't. I have a too vivid imagination. I just don't. I think that goes back to my childhood. I could tell you a story, but I'm not.
Sounds like me with lightning. I'm terrified of it. Mm-hmm. But when I had my children, I had to try to pretend that I wasn't scared.
See, we all have these little things that within ourselves that bother us. Right. Yeah. I was supposed to go to the bathroom. Long time ago, we had an outhouse, and I was supposed to go to the bathroom. Did you hear that story? Huh?
No, but we had one too.
And because I was passing gas too much, it was in the evening and it was dark, and I had to go out to the outhouse to go to the bathroom, and I refused, and I went and hid behind the freezer, so they spent all night looking for me. I was scared of the dark. I wasn't going out to the outhouse. Forget it. But that's the first thing I can remember about it.
I think everybody's scared of the dark a little bit to some degree because you can't see, and the little sound is amplified, and you can't see
I know some people that claim they're not afraid of the dark, but I mean, I don't know that for sure, but. Huh? You're not?
No. You wouldn't be if you're out in the woods and it's rustling and all of that.
Well, the darkness is the woods, the forest. Well, yeah, you're not afraid to walk down the street. I mean, that's not dark. That's a lit up street. I'm not afraid of that either. Come over to my house and walk. I'll turn off all the lights and walk out in the woods and let's see what you think. Huh? Yeah, so I would be afraid to walk in town. That's not dark.
And God said, let there be light.
And let there be light. I'm thankful for that. So she ate the fruit. She ingested the idea, took it into the inner depths of her soul, and she did. Wisdom did gain. Now let me stop and I want to explain wisdom a little bit. I'm not saying God's wisdom took a fall. I'm saying that the wisdom that was the helpmeet that was given us as wisdom took a nosedive. So God's wisdom did not fail. It was our helpmate, our human helpmate, both male and female have it, wisdom, that part of it, out of lack of experience, chose wrongly. Or didn't understand. This explains why we are in the condition we're in. Did this event actually happen in reality at some time in the past? I don't know. I think it's more about defining us as humans. I don't have to have an Adam and Eve, which Adam and Eve are not even mentioned really all through, until outside of the garden. In some texts, it's not even mentioned, Adam and Eve. And Adam and Eve at this part, even though I read it, this particular text, I think somewhere along the line has Adam in it. But Adam in most texts and Eve is not named until they're going out the garden.
You can kind of think of it in terms of when we first became humans, we were intent only on surviving. But once we learned to survive and to make things easier for ourselves, the first time that someone thought, well, I want this instead of mine, without, you know, I'm going to die if I don't have it type thing, once true evil came into someone's heart, that was the start.
Cain and Abel. It's a story when evil took a hold of you. That explains just that. We'll eventually get there. That's where I place when it actually came about on the earth, in the story of Cain and Abel. Now, you sparked my memory on something I wanted to say something about, and now I forgot it already. What did you say?
I just
want
to remember what I said.
Oh, I hate that when that happens. Okay, maybe it'll come. You were talking about evil coming. Anyway.
Being too intent on surviving to worry about, to even think about evil in and of itself. But once we were able to do more than just survive,
it ain't making it. Anyway, I'll go on. So she offered it to her husband. Now, here again, you're talking about translations and different texts that mean different things. So wisdom gave it to the person or the human. That's how I see it. She transferred it over to the human and. I know that idea is just right there. It just won't come. And he ate it too. Now, so here I'm going to say, if you're going to accept the old idea of woman is responsible for the sin of the world. Here is where the man's responsibility should have came in. If you think of the story as literal, then where is his responsibility of saying to her, no, don't do that. Don't do that. I don't want that. But both their eyes were opened. Their physical eyes were opened. And they were both in unison, and they were naked. I'll go to that idea, and that's where I'm going to stop. The idea of a naked soul is something that we don't quite understand either. This is where I see this text saying that they realized they were naked, they were without a body, without a form necessarily, or they had no skin. Or Paul goes on to talk about when it comes to salvation, that if your works are not real good and they get burnt off, you will escape as like a naked soul. He refers it to being naked. So the idea of the lack of any works, the lack of any wisdom, the lack of any experience, left them naked. So we're not born with a whole lot of wisdom. I don't know about you. I had to experience life. I can take my experience and try to teach my kids as best I can or explain it to you, but is that going to transfer? It might. It says no.
Like this boy said, when he was 16, dad didn't know nothing. But when he got to be 25, dad was smart and great.
So there seems to be that period of time when our parents know nothing, and we have to experience life ourselves. We as individuals have to experience our own wisdom, our own knowledge, and for some reason, I can't transfer or you can't transfer over to anybody else. We learn it through experience. So is this an experience is this illustrating how we learn in the process? We learn by... Self-aware, yes. I think in the end, they did become self-aware when they became naked. Now I realize I'm aware. I think, therefore, I am. Kant, I think somebody says that.
The eyes of both of them were opened.
Yeah.
James says.
Right. They understood. They figured. And so what did they want to do? They wanted to cover themselves up. Now, there are different ideas. I want to say this idea yet, and then I'm going to quit. There are different ideas on whether or not we were supposed to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil or not. I listened to a rabbi. And I'll start with this one before I get to the second one that Colleen is smiling about. I listened to a rabbi who said that this was a way of depicting all knowledge. So you say it is all the good and all the bad put together. It's like Jesus or God is everything that is and is not. It's that form. Now, there is a story, and I don't know all the names. It was written in the Sumers, who were one of the earliest writings around, and tell a story of creation. Enlil and Anunnaki. Right? The Anunnaki.
Yeah, the Anunnaki.
Anunnaki. And in there, they say that we were supposed to eat from the tree of knowledge and good and evil, or otherwise we would have ended up being ignorant. Some people think that this story here was written over top of that or used. I'm reluctant to think that way without any proof. I'm not saying it's not. Because I think knowledge is gained by two different ways. I can hand it much as to you as I can. You know, it's handed down in a book or verbally. It's handed down this way, laterally across from one person to the next. But there's also divine knowledge that comes down, and inspired knowledge that comes down into the individual's heads. So I see that as two different ways of seeing knowledge being given to us. The Spirit of God gives us wisdom. The woman gives us wisdom into our being and hands it to us. Divine comes down. Then it goes this way. So I'm reluctant to say that that is overwritten. It may be. I'll give you one other illustration real quick. When in big history, when the world moved from a hunter-gatherer type of civilizations or little civilizations or tribes onto an agricultural society, it started immediately 5 different places around the earth, and they don't know why it started 5 places around. There was no communication that they know of whatsoever. There was no radios, no cell phones, no nothing, no mail service, but it started in 5 different places in this whole earth. Why? Because it was divinely inspired, coming down from gods or gods. You want to comment? We will have a conversation on the way home. Huh? Yeah, she has a little bit different view than I do, and that's okay. What I say is, I use the illustration, you take a bunch of half nutshells and turn them upside down on a plate. You have different ideas under each one. You move them around. You eventually come, the way she thinks and the way I think, we eventually come to the same conclusion. We are humans walking on this earth with what we're doing. The story, I think, basically comes pretty close to the same. Yeah, we're all walking each other home.
You're saying we're nutshells.
I think we're the nuts inside.
Well, I guess a nut has to have some meat somewhere. So, my point was that there's many different ways of understanding this text, and many different ways of understanding it. But I think that I'll say these words and I'm done. Jesus said the kingdom of God is within. So let us take the time to look within and take a glimpse. Amen.